Well, I'm John Morgan. I've written a series of books on the Diana inquest, exposing a huge cover-up. The book that I've just recently finished was the fourth volume, focused on the evidence that was heard during the inquest in 2007-08 in London into the death of Princess Diana and Dodi Fayed. The books are also based on documentary evidence, none of which was shown to the jury during the inquest, but it's documents from within the British Paget police investigation. And when you put the evidence from the documents that the jury never saw and evidence from witnesses the jury never heard and put that together with the evidence the jury did hear, it's a lot easier to put together the story of what actually did occur. It was almost impossible for the jury to understand the events before the crash and also in the events after the crash, what actually occurred.
So what facts would you point to that might suggest a different verdict?
There's a substantial amount of evidence that the driver of the vehicle, Henry Paul, was not drunk. After the crash, an autopsy was done on the driver, Henry Paul, and it was made out that he was drunk, that the findings from the autopsy were that he was three times the drink limit in France. The evidence that was used for that is false, and there's a substantial amount of evidence that shows that there were two bodies in the autopsy room that night, and the samples were taken from the second body, which is not Henry Paul. Those are the samples that were tested, toxicology testing, and they gave a finding of a person who was drunk. But Henry Paul, on the night, there's substantial evidence showing that he wasn't drunk. In the Ritz Hotel, the witnesses have all said that he was sober, and the CCTV footage shows him sober. Also, the findings in the toxicology showed that the person who the samples were taken from had a high level of carbon monoxide poisoning, and that was not reflected in the actions of the driver on the night. A person with the level of carbon monoxide poisoning in the body that was tested and then combined with the alcohol, he wouldn't have been able to even get into the car. He would have been so disabled from it all. So if I was a lawyer, that would be the main point you'd focus on, because when you realise that there's a huge cover-up that stated that the driver was drunk when he actually wasn't drunk, you know, the truth's just not being told. And the accident wasn't caused by a drunk driver. Instead, it was caused by following motorbikes that were pursuing the car into the tunnel. And the motorbikes can be shown to not be paparazzi. The paparazzi were riding on scooters and driving small cars, and there was no way that they could have kept up with the speeding Mercedes. And there was about eight or nine witnesses that saw the motorbikes pursuing the Mercedes along the route. These motorbikes were powerful motorbikes. They were not bikes that paparazzi were using. And none of these riders on these motorbikes have been identified. There's about three to four motorbikes involved, and none of those riders have ever been identified. They left the scene of the crash. That's a cover-up in itself. No one's been held accountable for that. It's been made out that it was the paparazzi. And even when you look at the evidence the jury did hear, their verdict that they returned was unlawful killing on the part of the driver, but also on the part of following vehicles. But the following vehicles were unidentified, and yet the media around the world had reported it as paparazzi, and that's just completely false. The paparazzi were nowhere near the Mercedes as it went into the tunnel. The bikes that followed the car and pursued the car into the tunnel, they just weren't paparazzi. And police did their own tests on the bikes that paparazzi were using, and they didn't have the power to keep up with the Mercedes. The witnesses saw powerful motorbikes going into the tunnel, and the paparazzi were not riding powerful motorbikes. So they know which paparazzi were on that night outside the Ritz Hotel that pursued the car. Those paparazzi are all identified and named. They were not the people pursuing the car as it went into the tunnel.
What about this Fiat Uno? Have you come across any evidence that that was actually real and involved?
Yeah, the Fiat Uno is definitely real. There's paint from the Fiat Uno on the Mercedes. There's scratch marks on that, and there was definitely a collision between the Mercedes and the Fiat Uno. The Fiat Uno is covered in my volume one of my books. The evidence points to that being driven by James Anderson, who was a paparazzi who followed Diana on her holiday with Dodi just up to about 2 days before the crash. Then he went home. There's a lot of evidence that points to him. It was his Fiat Uno. He owned a Fiat Uno that got sold within 2 months of the crash, and that Fiat Uno was the one in the tunnel on the night. And then James Anderson died a violent death about 3 years after the crash. His car was burnt up. The fireman that arrived on the scene saw two bullet holes in his head, and the autopsy that was done in France established that it was suicide, which was absolutely impossible for someone to suicide with two bullet holes and then have their car burnt up. The car was completely incinerated. It was just an unbelievable fire. So there's a lot of evidence that points to him being the driver. He had links to the intelligence, and certainly that it was his fair unit. It was in the tunnel, like the paint on the Mercedes matched with the paint that was on his fair unit.
Is there any evidence that maybe more people would have survived the crash than actually did survive it eventually?
What happened in the crash was the two people who were on the driver's side, like the driver and then the person behind him, it was Dodie, they both died instantly. The two people on the passenger side, which was Trevor S. Jones in the front, who was the bodyguard, and Diana in the back, they both survived the crash. That's because the impact was on the driver's side. So there's a photo showing Diana sitting on the floor of the car facing back. There's a photo of her, and it shows her quite alive, and also there's a lot of witness evidence that she was talking after the crash. And when the doctor got there, they did a Glasgow coma test, which is a scale of 15, and she scored 14 out of 15. So she was in fairly good condition as far as her head and that was concerned after the crash. And it's a Glasgow coma scale rating, which is used around the world by medics. When they arrive at a crash scene, they assess the victims, the people who are still alive. And out of 15, Diana scored 14. So it looks at things like, are they responding to me? Are they talking? There's 15 different points that it looks at. On the documentary evidence of the ambulance report, she shows 14 out of 15. So it came out in the inquest, 14 is very high. And that's a very good reading. So it took the medics 1 hour, 43 minutes from the crash to when Diana arrived at the hospital. So that is an incredibly long period of time. The evidence shows, it's in volume two of my books, that there's actually very strong evidence that shows that she was mistreated inside the ambulance on the night. So 1 hour, 43 minutes, when you break it all down, every aspect of it took a long time. Like, it took too long to get her out of the car, 30 minutes or something, and then they were sitting in the ambulance in the tunnel for about 30, 40 minutes.
John, you've just said something pretty shocking there, that there's evidence that she was mistreated in the ambulance. Can you spell out exactly what you mean by that?
The first thing I should say is that when she's taken into the ambulance, the doctor assessed her condition, and on the documentary evidence of the ambulance report, it shows that they found a thoracic trauma. So she's undressed in the ambulance and the doctor assesses her condition, and he saw a trauma on the thorax, which is the chest area. There was an internal injury there that eventually she died from. And when you look at the transcripts of what the doctor said to the base, this is amazing, but what he said was that there was a major head injury, which there wasn't at that stage because she scored a 14 out of 15, and he said nothing for the thorax. And he said nothing for the thorax twice to the people at the base. So even though they knew there was thoracic trauma, the documentary evidence is there, that they were saying nothing for the thorax. Now, that's weird anyway, because you'd be thinking they'd be focusing on what she has got, not on what she hasn't got. The reason that they were saying that was so when the base rang the hospital, they wouldn't be saying, get a thoracic specialist there, so that when she comes in, someone can look at the thorax. I know it sounds really bad, but when you look at the evidence, and it's all there in the inquest transcripts, that is what the transcript between the ambulance and the base, nothing for the thorax. That is very, very sinister. When you look at the length of time it took them, the 1 hour, 43 minutes, and then when you realise that outside the hospital, like, they drove really slowly, and when they got to within sight of the gates of the hospital, within 500 metres of the hospital gates, the ambulance stopped for 5 minutes. There were two journalists that followed the ambulance. In the evidence, they were saying that someone got out of the front, a doctor actually got out of the front of the ambulance and into the back. So already there was a doctor in the back. And when you look at the ambulance report, there are also two assistants in the back. So there are already three people in the back. And then a doctor got out of the front, not the driver, the doctor who was sitting on the other side in the front. He was sighted by a journalist getting out and getting into the back. So then you end up with four people. Then one of the journalists said he saw a rocking ambulance. You've got to ask yourself, why does the ambulance stop so close to the hospital anyway? If there's a problem in the ambulance, most ambulances would rush to the hospital and get it sorted out there. But they stopped. They stopped for 5 minutes. Now, there's been no realistic explanation. The doctor was asked about why he stopped. He just said it was to administer extra fluids because he thought that she might be approaching a situation where she could have a cardiac arrest. Well, that's not a strong enough argument, if you look at it medically, to stop the ambulance. They stopped for 5 minutes. Why did a journalist see a rocking ambulance, you know? What were they doing? He said that they weren't doing the heart massage. The doctor said that. So what were they doing that caused the ambulance to be rocking? And why do you need four people in the back for whatever they were doing? So it's not just that it took 1 hour 43 minutes, but it's what actually went on inside the ambulance that is quite distressing. I find that volume two, where it looks at the medical evidence, I find that probably the most distressing aspect of all my research, because really what you're saying is there's a lot of evidence that shows the crash was orchestrated, but this evidence shows that there was a backup plan. So she survived the crash, but then they actually manipulated the situation so that they had the right doctors there at the ambulance, that whoever was organising the crash controlled what was going on in the ambulance. And so they made sure that she was not going to survive that night. And when you look at the timing, it took them 1 hour 43 minutes to get to the hospital, and then 6 minutes later, she stopped breathing. And she never recovered from that. Even though the official time of death was 4 o'clock, Paris time, she actually died significantly before that. It was 6 minutes after she arrived, she stopped breathing and never recovered. So whatever they did in the ambulance, she only survived another 6 minutes in the hospital. So then they spent another hour or an hour and a half trying to get her to recover, but she was lost. And they, by the time she got to the hospital, they had no hope because she was in such bad condition. She really couldn't survive, and 6 minutes later she stopped breathing.
Have you looked into possible motives for a cover-up?
You've got really two aspects to it. You've got the relationship with Dodi. The other thing, which I think is probably more significant, is her involvement in the landmines. And when you look at the evidence, she only just really started getting deeply involved in that in January 1997, so that's just 8 months before she died. When you look back on the footage of that, she was walking in those minefields in Angola and in Bosnia, and nearly everyone who was alive then can remember that footage, and it had an impact, and this is what worried the authorities, I believe. She was calling for a ban on all landmines, and had she achieved that, and she didn't because the US ended up not signing the treaty, but had she been alive and continued to get public support behind that, then I doubt that she would have stopped at landmines. She would have been looking at other arms. And see, when you think about it, the French, if you look at my books, and part three really covers the French cover-up, the French are in this up to their necks. It happened on French soil, and there's a hell of a lot of evidence that shows French involvement in the cover-up, including the manipulation of Henry Paul's autopsy and stuff like that. So if the reason for her death was just the relationship between Dodi and Diana, and the possibility of Diana being pregnant, the French wouldn't be involved because they are not that supportive of the royal family to want to get involved in something like this. But the French are in this cover-up big time, and they have a big-time arms industry as well, as do Britain and the US. And I believe that the people who brought this about, it was done by the intelligence agencies like MI6 primarily, and also the French DGSE and DST, and also probably the CIA. The people that were on the ground running this. As to who actually gave the orders, I'm not sure yet, but I'm still investigating this. But the motives really get down to those two things. So the relationship with Dodi, but I think primarily landmines is probably even more powerful than that. And also there was evidence at the inquest from Simone Simmons, who was at Kensington Palace in February 1997, which was a month after Diana's trip to Angola, against landmines, and she was at the palace and a phone call came through. Diana answered the phone, and after she'd been listening for a minute or two, she beckoned Simone Simmons over to the phone, and both of them had their ears to the phone. And Simone Simmons gave sworn evidence that the person on the other end of the phone said she should stop interfering with the landmines or an accident could happen. That's a death threat, and Simone Simmons heard that. And Diana told her that the person was Nicholas Symes, the politician. And at that time, he was in the Ministry of Defence. He was the Minister of the Armed Forces. So that's sort of evidence pointing to landmines being a motive. On the other side of it, there's a letter that Diana wrote in 1995 to Paul Burrell, stating that she could die in a car crash, and that's actually the letter that got me, when I saw that published in 2003, that's what got me involved in thinking that there's more to this than what the authorities are saying. And because how can a person predict their own death and the method of death in a car crash? She was putting the blame on Charles. Well, I don't know. But the thing is that is how she died. So there's two sides to this. There's the relationship with Dodie and Diana, which is causing great embarrassment. The possibility of having children that would be related to the future king that were Muslim, that's a aspect that brings the royal family into it. Then on the other side, you've got the arms industry and the landmines, and the involvement of France certainly points to that. So there could be a dual motive there. The British establishment has been involved in a cover-up. The French establishment has been involved in a cover-up. This is a huge thing. This is just so big that it's just really incomprehensible that they were able to bring it about, but they have. And the evidence in these volumes shows that they have done that.
What's in your latest book, and give us the title?
The latest book is called Diana and the British Cover-Up, and that's about what happened in the 24 hours immediately following Diana's death. And what it shows, it's very shocking, but it shows that when you put the documentary evidence from within the British police files that the jury never saw, when you put that together with what the evidence they heard, it shows that Diana, her post-mortem samples in the UK were switched, and that the samples that were toxicology tested were not from Princess Diana. The evidence is very clear, and the thing is the jury weren't shown the post-mortem report or the toxicology report. And if they had seen those, they would have seen the toxicology report said that there was no embalming fluid and no alcohol in Diana's blood. And yet, she was embalmed in France earlier that day. So how can you have a person embalmed and have no embalming fluid in the samples? That's just one aspect. There's actually about 10 or 12 different points that point to the samples that were tested not being Diana's. Now, the other aspect to this is the involvement of the Queen in controlling events. Within 30 minutes of the crash, there's actually circumstantial evidence showing that there was a phone call made to organise the French embalming that was made to Kenyans who used to be the funeral directors for the royal family. And Kenyans was part of the French company that actually ended up doing the embalming. So, see, Diana wasn't a royal in 1996. She had the royal status removed, the HOH was removed. She was no longer a member of the royal family, and yet within hours of her death, she's got the royal standard on the coffin coming out of the French hospital. That's what's on the cover of the latest book. There's other things like the royal coroner ended up taking jurisdiction of the body. That was illegal because on the first day after the death, that same day, Sarah and Jane, her sisters, had told the coroner that Diana would be buried at Allthorpe, and there's documentary evidence showing that's in the book. And yet the coroner went against that because the British law says that the jurisdiction of the coroner is based on where the body is to be buried. And the royal coroner took jurisdiction illegally on the day. So these things are all based on control coming from Balmoral. The fact that the royal coroner had control, that gave him control over what happened in the post-mortem and the switching of the samples. And there's a lot of shocking evidence in this latest volume, but it's not talking about what happened before the crash. It's talking about what happened in those 24 hours following the crash, and how Diana suddenly became a royal when she wasn't a royal. She was, you know, Charles got sent over to Paris. Well, Charles is the ex-husband, you know. Charles is in the letter saying, he will bring about my death in the car crash. And yet he's the guy that's sent across to pick up the body and bring it back to the UK. Once again, it's putting the royal stamp. See, the British people would have thought, oh, this is great. It's a patch-up, you know, like the royals have been against Diana, and now they're actually befriending her, but she's dead. People would have thought that was good. The people converging in London who wanted the Queen to come down and that they would have thought, well, it's great. The Queen is now accepting Diana. She's put the royal standard on the coffin. But it's all part of getting royal control so that the coroner could take illegal jurisdiction and therefore they could control what happened in the post-mortem and also the timing of the inquest. I mean, the inquest took 10 years to come about. That's because the Royal Coroner was controlling that.